I am pleased to present an audio recording of the workshop on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali that was held on Saturday, September 16th, 2017. In this session, we covered sutras number 6 through 15 in chapter 1. I hope you will enjoy this discussion, and I look forward to hearing back from you with your feedback or your comments. Let's close the eyes, sit up nice and comfortably tall. Let's recite Om 3 times. Take a deep breath in. We always start with an invocation to Sage Patanjali. So you can either look at the screen and read along or just keep the eyes closed, listen in. Inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena Yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. And we'll have Pranth read the meaning loud. So, how many of you were here last time? You missed. You were away.
Yeah.
I think you.
Away. Yeah.
Gone. Yeah. Okay. So last time we started a fresh round of discussions on the sutras. And we decided to go sutra by sutra. So we'll go one sutra at a time. And the effort will be to understand the sutras in depth as much as possible, as much as I understand. And we said we'll first recite the sutra in Sanskrit. Then I'll give you the meaning of each word, Sanskrit word. And then we'll try to put it all together. That okay? So, we did the first 5 sutras last time. Alright. And very quickly I'm going to review those 5 sutras just to give you an idea what they are. So, the first one is the very introduction to yoga. It says, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Okay, does everyone remember that? Atha Yoga Anushasanam. That means, now I am presenting to you the Anushasanam or the discipline of yoga. That's what it means. I'm I'm going to present to you now the knowledge of yoga, the discipline of yoga, or the whole stuff that's called yoga. That's going to be the... And we also said artha is a very important word. It means, it represents authority of the teacher, it represents qualification of the students, and it represents an auspicious time for the presentation. So that's what we said last time. Artha yoga anushasanam. Okay? Then the next one is the very definition of yoga. Again, this is something that I have mentioned before. I would like you to memorize it in Sanskrit. Okay, so does everyone remember that? Or yogash nirodha. Very nice. Yogash chitta vritti nirodha. It means that yoga, by definition, is the controlling or subduing of the fluctuations that are constantly happening in the mind. Mind is going through constant turbulent movement all the time. So yoga is all about calming those fluctuations, calming whatever is going on, whatever is bothering us. Even if it's not bothering us, we want to calm it down. Because we have... Okay, so that's the definition of yoga. Then the next sutra is, it tells you what happens when you are able to calm the mind. What happens when you are able to calm the mind? Okay, yeah. So then it says that when you are able to calm the mind, tada, drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. That's the next statement. Tada means then, at that point. That means at the time when you are able to calm the mind, the soul or the atma can rest in its own true nature. You okay here? So the atma or the soul can rest in its true nature. That means at that point we become what's commonly known as self-realized. What is self-realization? What does that mean? When people say self-realized, what does it mean to you? It could be a different meaning for everyone. It doesn't have to be a standard meaning. No, I'm not looking for a very standard definition. I'm just trying to see what you kind of make out of that statement when someone is self-realized.
That means you know your strengths and weaknesses, good and bad, what actually you think you are as a person.
What, as opposed to what you think you are, self-realization means you know who you are. It's no more think. It's a pure, full knowledge of understanding who you actually are. There's no doubt left at that point. Do you get the idea? See, right now I'm doubtful.
Me too.
Right?
That's
right now I have that I have all kinds of doubts as to who I am, you know. Am I my thoughts? Am I my feelings? Am I my emotions? What am I? I don't know. But when you're able to calm the mind, it says you will have no such doubts. That's what this statement means. That I will be self-realized because then my soul will be able to rest in its own true essential nature. Right now it's all muddled. It's all mixed up, messed up, confused, everything. So that's the next statement. Oh, I was on the previous one. Tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. And then, if you don't do that, what it's saying is, if you do not make the effort to calm the mind, then what happens? You're stuck where you are. That's what it is saying. Vritti sarupyam etaratra. Etaratra means otherwise. Otherwise, implying that if you don't calm the mind, if you don't make that effort to practice yoga, then you are stuck where you are. That means you are constantly controlled by your own thought processes, your own emotions, and everything that's going on in the mind. And there is no way out. You can never be self-realized. That's essentially what it means. Okay. So, what happens in the mind? Whatever is happening in the mind, it's called a vritti. V-R-I-T-T-I, vritti. That is, whatever is happening in the mind at any given instance of time, it could be a thought, it could be an emotion, it could be a feeling, it could be a memory that just sprang up in the mind, anything. It's called a vritti. And what he's saying is, we want to learn how to calm these vrittis, calm these fluctuations of the mind. So the next one was the introduction to the word vritti, because it says vrittayaha panchatayaha klishta klishtaha, which means vrittis are fivefold, five of them, and they are all, everything that we talked about, all emotions, feelings, thoughts, knowledge, lack of knowledge, everything can be clubbed into these five broad categories. That's the idea here. Okay. And they can be klishta. Klishta means painful. Right? They could be cause of some inner pain, conflict, whatever. Or they could be aklishta. Aklishta means no pain, maybe pleasant. Okay? So that's the five vrittis. So that's as much as we did last time. Okay? Then we want to move on from here. So we're now going to start discussion of the five vrittis. Okay? The five vrittis are defined as follows. Okay? So we're going to read the sutra one by one first. So let me break this whole thing. Pramana. Viparayaya. Vikalpa. Nidra. Smritayaha. Let me do it one more time. Pramana. Viparyaya. Vikalpa. Nidra. Smritayaha. So that's the enumeration of these five vrittis. Okay? And we'll come to the meanings as we go to individual vrittis, otherwise, you know, we can spend time here or just wait, okay? Because we're going to do five of these, okay? Now, so the meaning is given here. These are the right cognition or right understanding or knowledge, wrong knowledge, misconception, okay? Imaginary knowledge, that's number three, vikalpa. Then sleep and memory, these are the five manner, five ways in which the mind can be disturbed, in which the mind can have something deposited in it as a feeling, as a thought, as an emotion, anything. The five ways of creating some change in your mind.
And that's not saying it's good or bad, it just is.
We don't, at this point, we're not doing any labeling. Okay, so good or bad is labeled by the ego. So that's another thing. We don't want to label anything as good or bad. Painful, not painful, maybe, yes. We'll get there. Okay. So we're going to first start understanding what the pramana is. Pramana, it says, is the right knowledge. And what Patanjali is telling us is that there are three techniques or three methods in which you can get this right knowledge. Okay? So one is, first is, so we'll repeat after me now, pratyaksha, anumana, agamaha. Pratyaksha, anumana, agamaha. These are the three ways in which you can attain, you can gather right kind of knowledge. Right knowledge is something that cannot be disputed, etc. You know, we know what right knowledge. If I'm looking at you, I know who you are, etc., etc. Right? So, pratyaksh means what? Pratyaksh. What does that mean?
Nothing which we can see.
Something that we can see. Now, even though the literal meaning is something that we can see, as she said, the meaning is extended in Sanskrit to include all the five senses. Okay? So it's anything that we can see, hear, touch, feel, etc., everything. Okay? So pratyaksha means which is available through the five senses, direct perception. The literal meaning is what we can see, like you just said. Excellent observation. Aksh means to see. Aksh. Pratyaksh means something that is visible, clearly visible. But like I said, when you look at the dictionary meaning of pratyaksha, it means anything that's available or within quotes visible through the five senses. So we have a very specific understanding of what we are experiencing, what we are perceiving. Okay, if I'm looking at you, I see not only the figure of a male, you know, man, but I know by looking at the characteristics that this represents Yeri. There's much more specific information in pratyaksha. The next one is called anumana. Anumana means?
Doubt.
Not doubt.
Estimation.
Estimation. Anumana. Estimation or?
Inference.
It's called inference in English. You have some prior knowledge of something. Okay, so I know, you know, from previous knowledge that, for example, this is a good example. I'm looking outside and I can tell that the sky has clouds. I cannot see the sky at this point. Sky is not in my view. But I can see the ground and the cars, etc. And normally in my understanding, in my knowledge, at this time of the day, there should be sun shining, therefore I would see some sunlight. I don't see that, therefore I know it's clouded. That's called inference, anumana. The most common example of anumana is, in our text, everyone says,
mistaking a rope for a snake. Or
no, that's different. That's the next one.
Oh.
You're ahead of us.
Yeah. No, the example that is given in, wherever there is smoke, there is fire. So, if you're looking outside, you know, you see some smoke coming out, you can infer that there is fire. Without fire, there is no smoke. We know that. So, it's based on our prior knowledge. But now, instead of specific, we are getting more general kind of information. Okay? So, I'm sitting here and I hear some footsteps. Go by. I hear some footsteps. From my prior understanding and knowledge, I know they are footsteps belonging to a human being. So I can say that a human being passed by. I probably don't know whether it's a male or female. I definitely don't know if it is if it is Dev or Yeri. It's much more generic information when you do Anumana. Okay? In that sense. Everyone get that? So, Pratyaksha is more specific. Anumana is more generic. More general kind of information. And what's Agama?
Arriving, coming.
Well, Agama has a very specific meaning in our literature. Agama means the word of a trusted being. And most commonly referred entity there is the ancient scriptures. Okay, so what they say is, whatever is given in the scriptures is true knowledge. And the reason they give is that the ancient scriptures contain information which was perceived or received by these yogis in their deepest state of meditation, which can only contain the truth and nothing but the truth. So whatever is given in our scriptures is the true knowledge, and it's a matter of trusting that knowledge and then calling it agama or the pramana. Pramana is the right knowledge, as we said. Pramana is the right knowledge, and through agamas we claim that it's the right knowledge. Okay. The another term in Sanskrit they use is aptavakya. That means, aptavakya means, again, the statement made by a trustworthy person or an expert, so to say. For example, if you have a teacher who you trust, there are many people in India, you know, who have a guru, for example, you know, and then they just follow the guru blindly because they trust that so much, they don't think of anything else. And that's because they think of the word of the guru as agama, as trustworthy, as the right knowledge. But whether it's right knowledge or any other knowledge, it creates a fluctuation in the mind. That's what we're talking about. Vritti. Vritti is the fluctuation of the mind. So, pratyaksha, anumana, agamaha, pramanani. These pramanani means these three constitute pramana. Pramana is the right kind of knowledge. Okay, so you're going to learn some basic Sanskrit also in the whole process, all right? Because that's the only way to learn in depth. So this is direct perception. I already mentioned all these things. Inference, anumana. Okay, the term they use is verbal testimony. That's the translation by one of the authors here. Okay, so now that was pramana. Then the next one is viparyaya. Okay. Viparyaya. Yeah, let's pronounce it viparyaya. Okay, so what it says is, viparyayo mithyajnanam atadrup pratishtham. That's okay. These are all mouthfuls for a lot of people, you know. Even for people from India, they are mouthfuls, yes.
That makes me feel better.
Because it's a language that is not commonly used by anybody. It's not a spoken language by any means. It's just that people, you know, like me, decide to learn it only because everything that's available for yoga is in Sanskrit. That's it. That's the only way you can learn. You know, if you want to learn anything in depth, you have to learn Sanskrit. Otherwise, you are completely dependent on somebody else's understanding, which is always likely to be flawed at some point or the other. Okay. So, but these are all difficult words. They are not commonly used. All right, so one more time. Viparyaya. Mithya jnanam. Atad rupa pratishtham. Tough. You know, we've gotten Laura to say these things very well now after all these years.
Still working on it.
You're doing a great job there. Okay. What's mithya jnanam? Mithya means? Mithya?
Opposite of satya.
Untruth. So which is not truth. So the jnanam is knowledge. So the knowledge which is not really true, and it is atadrupa. Rupa is form or the shape or some understanding of how, what it is. Okay. So when the knowledge is pratishtham, pratishtham means established or based on. So when the knowledge is based on something which is not its own form, which is not its own true form, that's called viparyaya. I'm giving you the very literal meanings of word by word so that at least you get a sense of where Patanjali is coming from. What does that mean now? You look at something, it is supposed to be something, but it is not that. All right? The example that Dave gave was?
The rope. Snake for a rope.
You get it right. So, this is again a very, very classical example. Every text will have this example. Okay, what it says is that at the end of the day, it's very dimly light evening, lit evening. There's not much light on the street. Somebody's walking on the street and looks at something lying on the road. And he thinks it's a snake and he runs away, afraid of the snake. And in the meantime, there's another guy coming who happens to have a flashlight in his hand. He says, hey, what's wrong with you? Why are you running away? He says, look, there's a snake here. He says, let me check. Flashlight, it's only a rope. It's not a snake. Okay, so what's the message here? That the rupa, tad rupa pratishtha, the main rupa, the main form, the true form of that object is a rope. Atadrup, the opposite of that. I was not able to recognize its own form, but I was confused. I was pratishtham. Pratishtham means I was kind of confused with. Pratishtham is to be established in something. Okay? So I was established in my mind that this is actually a snake, when it is not a snake. Why was I doing that? Because there is not enough light. Because it is darkness, I am engulfed in avidya. Avidya is?
Ignorance.
Because of darkness, because my mind is full of darkness, I am full of avidya. It's coming to a very deep truth now. Because of all the darkness in my mind, because mind is full of all kinds of crap and it's creating darkness there, it doesn't give me the light of wisdom. Therefore, I don't know what the reality is. I don't know if it's a snake or a rope. So what do I need to know the truth? I need light. I need the light of true wisdom to be able to understand the reality of life. You get the picture here? Let's share here. So, what it says is that when you are confused because of some reason, and you're not aware of the true essential nature of something, the true form of something or the true essence of something, then that causes all kinds of ignorance. And ignorance could cause all kinds of problems for us. Okay? Reality. I always like to give this example, you know, because it stays in my mind all along, you know. When we moved to this country, and this was back in the 70s, late 70s, and I came first, then my wife came a year later because visa issues and all that, you know, we had some problems. Anyway, finally, she and my daughter, they came over. So we went for pizza one evening. And in those days, I used to eat meat. Okay, so I ordered pepperoni pizza. And in my mind, I just totally forgot that my wife doesn't eat meat. So anyway, I ordered it. I didn't know that she eats no meat. So I ordered a separate pizza for her, but which was taking much longer. So in any case, this pepperoni pizza came, and then I started eating, and she took a bite, started eating it, and enjoyed it. And I said, okay, in this 1 year, she started eating meat back in India. I said, okay. So I went home, and an hour later, we went home, you know, obviously. So I asked her, I said, when did you start eating meat? She says, what meat? I said, you ate pepperoni pizza. I said, that was tomato pizza. Those round things, she thought it was tomato. So I said, you enjoyed it. Oh my God, that was meat. And instantly she threw up. Instantly she threw up, actually. She literally threw up right at that moment. That's what the light of knowledge can do to you. See, the ignorance can make you do stuff, and then you get the light of knowledge.
Ignorance is bliss. Yes.
Ignorance is bliss. So that is viparyaya. And we get, you know, this is constantly what we are doing. We completely, all the time, misunderstanding things, not being able to see things in their own light. And this is happening all the time. And that's why we are always confused and stressed and everything. Just because we do not realize the true essence of anything. You know, we're working on a project, our boss says something, maybe he said something different, and we always misunderstand that. And then get into all kinds of trouble. We always misunderstand communication between us and everyone else, including our spouses, and we get into all kinds of trouble. That's the power of this viparyaya. Everyone got that? Illusory knowledge based upon what is other than itself. Now, this translation that I have, they are all from this book by Swami Satchidananda. At the time I did these slides, that's the book that I had handy, so I said, okay, let me just copy all this. Okay, every author will give you a different translation, you know that. Every author will give you a different translation. It is misconception because it can be refuted, contradicted, and annulled by correct cognition. So an example I've given is someone with double vision sees two moons, but it can be easily refuted by the sight of a single moon by somebody else. That's another example. Okay. So this is all called avidya, ignorance. Ignorance of not knowing what the reality is. And in chapter 2, when we come to chapter 2, it talks about kleshas. Remember the word klesha? Anybody remember what klesha is?
Affliction.
Affliction, pain, suffering, stress. And it, you know, this avidya or the lack of knowledge leads us to these other kleshas. I've just listed there. Ignorance leads to I am-ness, which is ego. I am-ness. It's a strange word for ego. That translation comes because the word used by Patanjali for ego is
asmita.
Asmita literally means I am-ness. Then the third is attachment, or the Sanskrit word for that is raga. And then the next one is aversion. The Sanskrit word is
dvesha.
Very nice. Raga and dvesha. And then fear of death. Sanskrit word for that is
abhinivesha.
Very good. So avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha. These are the five causes of suffering. Kleshas, they are called. Kleshas. And they are all the outcome of this avidya that we talk about. Ignorance. Okay. So the next one is, has to do with vikalpaha. Vikalpaha, we said, is imaginary knowledge, fantasy or something. That's vikalpa. Okay. So the sentence is, shabda jnana anupati vastu shunyaha vikalpaha. Shabda jnana anupati vastu shunyaha. Vastu. Vastu. Vastu shunyaha vikalpaha. Okay. Shabda is sound, word. Right? Shabda jnana anupati. Jnana is knowledge. So the knowledge that you can perceive, which is based on a shabda, or the sound of a word, or a word itself, when that is vastu shunyaha. Shunyaha means devoid of, which is not consisting of something. Shunya means zero in some way.
Vacuum.
Vacuum. When it is devoid of vastu. Vastu means?
Material.
So any material object, when the knowledge gained out of a word is devoid of any material essence, it's called vikalpa. Then we start imagining things. That's the whole idea. When we don't know the reality, we start imagining things. It's called fantasy, vikalpa. So these words that Patanjali has used, they give a lot of meaning. You know, they give a lot of understanding of what he had in mind. So when you read the commentaries, you won't get that depth unless you know the exact word-by-word meaning. That's why, you know, I decided to kind of study the language. So it is, for me, it becomes, you know, much more effective in terms of understanding or analyzing the statements.
Subhash, are there English Sanskrit dictionaries using the transliteration, or are they all use the Devanagari script?
You can set it for whichever you want. You can set it up for either. So here, you can set the output to be either Devanagari or something like this. It doesn't matter. So for example, we said the word vikalpa, right? All right. So it's going to give you the meaning of the word vikalpa now. And these are the meanings. Okay. All right. That means it is an alternative meaning, so to say. Vikalpa means something which is alternate to something real, which is not reality, but it's an alternate to that something. So it says an intermediate, the interval between two kalpas, etc., etc. There are a lot of different meanings given here. Every word will give you dozens and dozens of meanings. So these are all online, available online. You can set the output to match what you feel more comfortable with. Okay. So you hear a word and then you start imagining stuff. We do that all the time. We hear something and we start imagining stuff, not trying to even find out what that might have meant. Because we have in our own mind, you know, preconceived notions about everything, and we always know the best. We always know better than anybody else, so we always start imagining stuff. And most of the time, you know, you when you talk about this statement by Patanjali, you think of all the abstract nouns, basically. Or stuff like time, for example. You hear the word time. What does it mean to you? Everyone may interpret it slightly differently. The word God, for example. You hear the word God, everyone has a different view of what that is. Or all the, like I said, all the abstract nouns. Truth, honesty, love, this, that, you know. All these words create an imaginary perception in your mind because it's not based on any reality, because we don't know what the reality is. We're trying to find those things. So that is vikalpaha. Let's see what the bullets, not a result of correct cognition, only driven by words without an actual object. Okay? Time. The word time is not an object but creates a vritti. Okay, so far, so good. So next one is nidra. Nidra means sleep. So the statement is abhava pratyaya alambana. Vrittihi nidra. Abhav pratyaya alambana vrittir nidra. Right. Pratyaya. The word pratyaya means content of the mind. Abhava means absence. Alambana means dependence, support. Very good. So, the first word means abhava pratyaya alambana. When in the absence of a support from the content of the mind. That means there is no content of the mind, and yet there is a vritti produced. That is called nidra, sleep. During the time of sleep, there is no content of the mind. The mind is also sleeping in a sense. All the five senses are shut out. There is no dream taking place at that point.
What about the dream state?
That's no, that's not considered nidra. In this context, that's not considered nidra.
This is deep sleep state?
This is deep sleep. Okay, the dream state is called swapna. Swapna. So there are three states, we call them. Jagrat avastha. Avastha is state. Jagrat avastha is waking state. Swapna avastha is the dream state. And sushupta, sushupta is this nidra. Sushupta means very deep sleep, no dreams. Okay. So what does it mean? It says abhava pratyaya lambana. In the absence of any content in the mind, whatever is at that time, any fluctuation that's produced at that time, that's called nidra. Now, it's a very, you know...
What is that supposed to mean? What is that supposed to mean?
That's exactly the point. What is that supposed to mean? So, is there anything that is produced when we are in deep sleep? So when we wake up from the deep sleep, what the commentators say, when you wake up from the deep sleep, at least you know whether you had a good sleep or not a good sleep. Yeah. That impression is left in the mind, and that's a vritti. You get that idea? Okay. Whether we had a good sleep or not a good sleep, whether that good sleep or that deep sleep was disturbed by dreams in between, that also becomes a vritti. Well, in the sense, that thought that, oh my God, I also had a dream while for some time I had a very deep sleep, but there I also had a dream, that becomes a disruption of that deep sleep. And that will create a vritti also. Essentially what we're saying is anything that's left in the mind as an impression from a very deep sleep state, that's called nidra. That's a vritti.
Oh, so anything left over from a sleep can cause more karma, basically?
Sure, yeah. Yes.
So what are we supposed to do? Wake up and not even have a thought that we had a good sleep?
No, that's fine. All it's saying is, it's defining all these things that happen in the mind. So this is what happens in the mind at the end of a deep sleep. You have at least a memory of whether you had a good sleep or not a good sleep.
Okay.
And that is considered a vritti. That's all we are saying. Okay.
So it
period.
Doesn't mean it's bad or good?
No, again, we are not labeling anything. Okay. Good or bad. We're just trying to understand what are the possibilities.
Possibilities of what, though? What is sleep?
Of how a vritti happens in the mind. Of a fluctuation, of a change, of something that gets deposited in the mind. How does that happen? We're only talking of that. And Patanjali said there are five ways of doing that. Pramana, Viparyaya, Vikalpa, Smriti, and Nidra.
But I thought you don't want to keep depositing stuff in your mind.
Can you avoid that?
I can't.
Nobody can. We cannot avoid stuff being deposited in the mind. The purpose of yoga, eventually when we come to that understanding, is to make that stuff that's in the mind ineffective. That's the purpose. How do we get there? We'll see. Still a long ways off, but there's no way we can avoid stuff being deposited in the mind. It's going to keep getting done throughout. No matter. Even if you're a yogi, even if you're a fully realized person, it's going to keep happening. Because we cannot do without doing stuff. We cannot live without thinking. We cannot live without interacting, etc., etc. Every one of those actions or events is going to create a deposit in the mind. But can I make that deposit ineffective in creating further impressions in the mind? That's the purpose. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
How do I do that? It's easy. Practice yoga, Patanjali says. But what exactly does it mean? For that we have to wait. Okay. So that's nidra. Let me see what is the commentary. Sleep is a vritti because you can look back and say, I slept well. No other vrittis are present during deep sleep. Dream may be thought of as imaginary cognition. That's the vikalpa. That's the vikalpa part. Dream is a vikalpa part because it's kind of imaginary in some sense. And sleep is an obstruction in the path of meditation. Why? I think the reason I mention that is because people say, oh, when I meditate, I fall asleep. They doze off. Anybody experience that? It happens sometimes. But that's definitely an obstruction in the path of meditation. And the sleep is dominated by the guna tamas. Does everyone know what these gunas are? Three gunas? Sattva, rajas and tamas. Okay, so we roughly know that.
What does tamas mean again? I forgot. Hmm? I know we have three gunas, but what is tamas?
Tamas is the dullness, the dullness. Sleep.
Okay.
Tamas is the one which is negative, sort of, in some sense.
Okay.
It generally has negative connotation, but in this case, sleep is not negative. You need that sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, but tamas, when you say tamas in general, it has a negative connotation. Sattva has a positive connotation. Rajas has more action, more activity. But you need all three. We have to keep in mind. You know, people tend to believe, oh, no, I just need sattva. No, you need all three. Otherwise, you cannot survive.
So consciousness remains active during sleep.
Right. So consciousness is something that is active during all states. Waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. The only thing that's active is consciousness. Consciousness is the light that is derived from the pure soul. And it's the light that keeps us conscious. We are conscious, but we are not aware when we are in deep sleep. You see the difference?
This is the difference than the Western concept of conscious, unconscious, is it?
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, think of it this way. When you are in deep sleep, you are not aware. Awareness is not there, but you are conscious. All right? When you wake up, you are aware and conscious.
So when you're enlightened, you'll be aware in deep sleep. When you're enlightened.
When you're enlightened?
Yeah, when you're conscious, you'll be a conscious even in deep sleep.
Right. But repeat the first statement you said.
When you're enlightened, you'll be aware in deep sleep.
What does that mean?
You'll be conscious.
No, we are always conscious.
Well, but you don't know. We don't know. We're always conscious. I don't know. I'm always conscious.
Yeah, okay. So you're aware that you're conscious.
Different meaning of awareness.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
Is aware.
Yeah. Okay. So remember there are three states, waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. But then, in the Vedanta concept, they take us further. They say there is a fourth state. What is it called?
Turiya.
Very good. It's called the Turiya state. Turiya literally means fourth.
And what does that mean?
What does that mean? That's the state we call self-realization. That's what we've been referring to as self-realization. At that point, in that state, when I'm in the Turiya state, I know who I am. I know that my real identity is my pure consciousness, not this body, mind, etc. That's called Turiya state. Okay? So, okay. This is now the definition of memory, smriti. Okay. So the sentence is, again you want to repeat,
anubhuta.
Vishaya. Asampramoshaha. Smritihi. Anubhuta-vishaya, asampramoshaha, smritihi. Okay. So again, word by word meaning. Anubhut Vishaya. Anubhut means, Anubhav means
experience.
Anubhuta means one which has been experienced. Anubhuta. Anubhav, Anubhuta. That's the experienced. Vishaya means subject. In this case, usually Vishaya means sense objects. Usually in the context of yoga, they will say Vishaya means the sense objects or any perception. Any perception. Anubhuta Vishaya. Asampramoshaha. It's a combination of multiple prefixes. Asampramopra. The main word is moshaha. It comes from the root word mush. Not English mush. Mish, what is mush? Mushed. Mush means to steal something, to take something away from somewhere, to let go of something. That's mush. Moshaha is the act of stealing something. Pramoshaha, when you add the prefix pra, it emphasizes it, really forcefully taking something away. Sampramoshaha is taking away something really well. Sam, like Sanskrit, you know. Sam is another prefix. When you finally add the prefix a, it negates the whole thing. Not letting anything go away at all. You know, keep it tight with you.
Causes a lot of pain to people.
Hmm?
That causes a lot of pain for people.
No, but what it's saying is that when you have experienced something, anubhuta vishaya, when you have experienced through perception something, and then it is not let go of, it stays in the mind, that's called memory. It's defining what memory is. Memory is not letting go of something that has been already perceived through the five senses or otherwise. Doesn't matter. You understand how these Sanskrit words, they can be really beautifully constructed together to give you the true essence of what he's trying to say. And it becomes very beautiful. Anita, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Sorry, I came
late. No, that's okay. But what I'm saying is, you're going to hurt your neck.
Oh, I'm okay. I'm comfortable.
I would not be able to sit like this for more than a few minutes.
She's young. That's what I want to do. She's young. She can go for it.
I can't do that.
Well, that's because we're not young.
Okay, let's repeat the sentence. It's a nicely sounding sentence, so let's repeat it. Anubhuta Vishaya.
Anubhuta Vishaya.
Asampramoshaha.
Asampramoshaha.
Smritihi.
Smritihi.
Okay. So the meaning given is, memory is the not letting go of an object or image of subjective experience. So it can be a perception through the five senses or just a subjective experience.
Question about pronunciation, that H on the end of the word.
Yeah.
Ha or he, does it take the sound of the
vowel? Sound of the previous. Okay. You, beautiful observation, yes. Okay. Takes the sound of the previous letter. Very good. So like vritti, right? It becomes vrittihi. Sampramosha. Very good. All right.
That's not either good nor bad. It just is.
It just is. It is. Right. You're coming to good and bad, you know, what makes it good and bad, what does it all. That's where all the problems are. We know that, so. Memories are a result of all the five vrittis. So everything that we have studied so far, any vritti that happens in the mind, it can cause a memory, because that's a perception, that's an experience. It, like other vrittis, it can result in pleasure or pain. And cognition creates impressions which manifests as memory in the mind.
The first sentence suggests that memories are the result of memories?
Yes. Yes.
That's an example of that.
Well, you did something 5 years ago, right? Bring up that memory in your mind. Let's say it was a conversation with somebody that you didn't like or something. Oh my God, I should have done this, I should have done that. And that anger is going to create another memory.
Just reinforces.
Reinforcing or create a different memory altogether. Now the memory will be...
The time you remember the time that...
Right, and now I have a memory that I got angrier this time, you know, because I didn't do something that I was supposed to do or I could have done or something. It's completely a new memory now. So memories can be created by memories because of our reliving those memories. So what did the last sentence say? Intelligence records the process of instrument of cognition, the actual form, the actual words or object from the memory. Form, they form it. Basically, whatever you perceive, that's what is going to be in the memory, whether it's an object or its shape or a thought, etc. It's all done by the buddhi. Buddhi is the intelligence. Okay, so those are the five vrittis. All right? Who wants to repeat the five vrittis in Sanskrit? If I do it, would you repeat after me?
Sure.
Pramana.
Pramana.
Viparyaya.
Viparyaya.
Vikalpa. Nidra.
Nidra.
Smritayaha.
Smritayaha.
The word is smritihi. When plural, when you, because there are five of these, so it becomes a plural word, so it becomes smritayaha.
Smritayaha.
Otherwise the word is smritihi. Okay? Because of plural, it becomes that. So pramana is the direct knowledge or good knowledge, correct knowledge. Viparyaya is the misconception or the wrong knowledge. Vikalpa is the fantasy or the imagined knowledge or alternate knowledge. You can think of that way. And nidra is sleep, deep sleep. If you think of nidra as deep sleep. And smritihi is memories. So now, Patanjali from here shift gears and then he says, let me now tell you how to control these vrittis. Okay? How do you do these? Remember the word used by Patanjali was nirodhaha. Yogas chitta vritti nirodhaha. Nirodha is the control or the subduing of these vrittis. So now he's telling us how to control these vrittis. Then the first sentence is, that's the number 12. So you want to repeat? Abhyasa.
Abhyasa.
Vairagya abhyam.
Vairagya abhyam.
Tannirodhaha.
Tannirodhaha.
So tannirodha means their control. They're referring to the vrittis. So what it means is, it's telling us how to bring about a control or the subduing of these vrittis. Tan nirodha, tat means that or those. So the nirodha of those vrittis that we just talked about can be done through
two things, abhyasa and vairagya. Through or with the help of these two, okay, abhyasa vairagya abhyam means with the help of abhyasa and vairagya, we can attain the nirodha of those vrittis that we have just been talking about. That's the meaning of this whole sentence. Everyone got that?
What does that mean when it says dispassionate detachment? Like, what's the difference between detachment and dispassionate detachment?
What's the difference between dispassionate detachment? I don't know. That's a good question. Is that from this book?
You're not passionate about it anymore. You don't miss it. You detach yourself, but you don't miss it. But if you're passionate, you still miss it, although you willingly detach yourself.
With passion, you'll create more with this. That's the way I look at it.
Right. I do too.
Like I said, I copied it from this book.
If you detach from it, then you don't have feelings toward it, right?
Right.
So then you can't be passionate or dispassionate.
That's I'm with you. I'm actually with you.
It might just be a translation thing. Like, I usually see Vairagya translated as just dispassion or just detachment. So it might just be like trying to get the more holistic translation by putting them both together.
Like I said, I just used the translation by Swami Sachidananda. I try to distinguish between detachment and non-attachment. Those two are, you know, something that we need to understand. Okay? Our first objective is to stay non-attached. That means I don't want to be attached to anything. But if I'm already attached to something, then I want to detach myself. So I draw a line between non-attachment and detachment. But this dispassionate detachment, myself having a hard time. Well, Swami Sachidananda is not around anymore, so we can't ask him.
Maybe it means what you just said, though, right? It's the non-attachment. So it's not detaching, but once you're already attached, maybe that's what that means, is non-attachment.
Yeah. Or it's just overloading detachment with dispassionate. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. He's emphasizing it.
That's possible. Just an emphasis.
What she said, I don't get your name, but
Viji.
What she said is something that I was resonating with myself. Mm-hmm. So you detach, but you detach because you want to detach.
Right.
But you still have something around that. But
then it's not detachment then.
No, it's. I wouldn't say that it is not attachment. You really get out of the whole thing, right? One is forcing yourself to do and doing it naturally.
Try to take the emotion out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just try to take the emotion. And if you see the emotion coming up, you try to look at that emotion and just sort of, you know, take a deep breath and let that emotion just go away. Mm-hmm. That's what I think I'm trying to do.
So, but Mahi, what you're saying is, and I'm assuming you're saying the same thing, that you have
some residual in there.
Some residual, so it is not a complete detachment. You understand the concept of detachment.
And you want it to.
And you want to do it, and yet there is some residual attachment still left over. So it's not complete detachment then. But for that, you say you become dispassionate. What does that mean now? Dispassionate.
You mirror yourself and you look at that detachment, how you're detached.
Uh-huh.
You know,
in an objective fashion.
Dispassion means what then in this case then? Dispassionate.
Maybe, like she said, objectively looking at what you, how you're perceiving something, or detaching yourself from something.
Okay.
Actually looking at that and going, okay, I'm a little emotional as I'm trying to detach myself from this.
Okay.
We might be reading too much into it. I think it's just translation. They use either word
sometimes. I understand. That's why I didn't pay attention until this question came up. I never paid attention to this. It doesn't say that?
No.
It doesn't say dispassionate.
So where did I, maybe somewhere else then I got it from.
Well, it does say it here, Subhash.
Hmm? So Vairagya, it just says it's non-attachment.
Oh, it's from this book then. Mm-hmm. I got it from this book then.
It says the exact words?
Oh, kind of. This part.
Practice and dispassion.
By practice and dispassion. It's okay.
I guess that's just emphasis.
It's ah. C plus detachment. That's how I'm going to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that you get a C. You're not there yet. You're trying, so you're a C plus detacher.
I mean, I can give one example, right,
for this.
For example, you always talk about mango, right? So, let's say you detach, you don't want to eat anymore, you detach. You're
right.
Not going to eat anymore.
But
when you say dispassionate, but you still know in the back of your mind you like it, but you're detached from it. But when you say dispassionate, even if you see it, you're not going to like it. You're completely dispassionate about it.
No, that's not.
No?
Yeah, because then you don't like it. You're not supposed to like or dislike.
That's the point. You're totally dispassionate about it. There's no likes or dislikes.
Exactly.
There's no rag or dvesh at that point.
You
still
have a memory of liking it, though.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Because of another
routine. Don't rub it in.
Okay. So I'll become a yogi only on the day when I have total detachment from a mango.
I'll have things like that. So. At these four different translations. One says dispassion, one says non-attachment, and two say detachment. So I think they just use
it. Yeah, yeah, she's mixing it up. It's okay. Okay, so this is just listing of these two things, abhyasa and vairagya. Okay. So like I said, in my mind, vairagya, I associate with both detachment as well as non-attachment, because they are both needed eventually. Okay. Then the next statement is tatra sthitau yatna. Actually, it's yatna abhyasaha. Tatra sthitau yatna abhyasaha. What is abhyasa? He is defining the word abhyasa. Tatra sthitau. To maintain that state. Sthita means to maintain some state. Sthita, sthiti. Tatra means there. That means in the state of nirodha. Tatra means there or that state. What is the state we are talking about? The state of nirodha. The state of total control or subduing of the fluctuations of the mind. So, yatna means effort. So, the effort to maintain that state or to be in that state, not maintain, to be in that state or to get into that state, the effort to get into the state of nirodha. Whatever that is called abhyasa. That's the definition here. Tatra sthitau yatnaha. Yatnaha means the effort. That effort, which is required to get into that state, tatra, that nirodha state, Nirodha of the vrittis. So it's all combining in these one, two words. That's the beauty of language.
Why is sthitau is there? Sthitau is for two, right?
Hmm?
Sthitau is for two. So what are the two?
No, no, not two.
Two. The thau is for the...
No, that's not dual.
Dual vachanam, no?
It's saptami, seventh case.
Here. Oh, okay. Sthitau from that saptami, okay.
Saptami, it's called saptami vibhakti.
Yeah.
Sthitihi. Sthitihi is when you have the saptami of that, it becomes sthitau.
Yeah.
Okay, so in that state. So tatra sthitau means in that state, the prayatna, the effort required to mean to get into that state, in that state. Sthitau means in that state. You get the idea?
Yeah.
It's not dual. She's talking of the grammar of Sanskrit. Okay, dual, like Ramau would be two Ramas. That's Ramaha Ramau. But this is not that, it is sthiti. Is that clarified?
Yes.
Okay. So, practice is the continuous effort to abide in a steady state. That's not quite the... Again, see, this is where the understanding of the language becomes more important to me, because I don't agree with this translation. It doesn't match exactly what I would have translated it as. So, it helps me clarify things. It's not abiding in a steady state. It's to get into that state. Okay. These are some of the things that commentators, they put in their commentaries. Stillness is the one-pointedness of the mind when it is without rajasic or tamasic vrittis. Rajas is action, movement, that aggressive nature, you can call it. That's rajasic. And tamasic is all dullness, sleepiness, negative tendencies. That's all tamasic predominantly. And again, I don't like this statement when it says it's without rajasic and tamasic. There can be nothing without rajasic and tamasic. It cannot be a complete absence of those. It's not possible. So wherever I got this from, now I'm questioning it myself. It's not true. No, like I said,
does
you
mean the other one though? Stillness is the one-pointedness of the mind when it is only with sattvic vrittis.
That's not possible. You have to have some traces of all. The dominance should be sattvic. But there's no way you can have total absence of either of the other two. It's not possible. And you don't want that, actually. So one who is neither pleased or displeased on receipt of sensory input which is pleasant or unpleasant is called calm. That we know that, What is calmness of the mind? You're not disturbed, perturbed by anything that's coming into the mind. When we say effort or prayatna, it is zeal and enthusiasm, courage, steadfastness and patience, pursuit of spirituality and attitude of service. Again, these are commentators who put their own two cents into the understanding of these words. Effort. This is from a commentary by Swami Veda Bharati that I've enjoyed reading. This last sentence. So that's the effort you require zeal and enthusiasm, courage, steadfastness and patience, pursuit of spirituality, service. Okay, so this is a statement that you have heard from me in my classes also. This is very important. Okay, so this is an explanation of what abhyasa means, right? So again, repeat after me. Satu dirghakala nairantarya satkar asevitaha dreda bhumihi. Okay. Again, a mouthful. This is important. This is something that you should memorize, in my opinion, this statement, because it is very important. Okay, so let's do it one more time. Satu dirgha kala nairantarya satkara asevitaha dridha bhumihi. Okay. So let's try to understand these words now. Okay. Satu means that. So it says, tatra sthitau yatnaha. Yatnaha is abhyasa, it says. Yatnaha is effort. And that effort, satu means that effort, that indeed should be done. How? Three characteristics of this abhyasa. Okay. Dirghakala. What does that mean? Very long duration of time. Very long time. Dirghakala. Nairantarya means?
Consistently
done. Very good. Antara means gap. Antara means gap. And nirantara means no gap. Nairantarya means with absolutely no interruptions, no gaps, no breakages. Okay. Satkar asevitaha. Asevitaha means applied or practiced, etc. Satkar means what?
Good deed.
Good deed, yeah. That's one meaning.
A sense of devotion.
A sense of devotion. Satkar means you have a lot of respect for something. A lot of devotion in a sense of kind of devotion, in a sense of trust, faith, belief. That kind of word is satkara.
Respect.
Respect, yes. You know, in our common Hindi terminology, we say when a guest comes home, you offer satkar. You know, offer a lot of respect, you know, with a sense of devotion. So, what are these three now? The effort or the abhyasa has to be done for a very long time. How long? Dirghakala. How long is that?
Lifetime.
That's true. That's what it is. Patanjali says that this nirodha of the vritti, this control or the subduing of the vrittis, it's not going to happen in one lifetime. Forget it. It's not going to happen in one lifetime. That's what he says. So dirgha kala in Patanjali's view means multiple lifetimes. A multitude. How many? We have no clue.
That's what you'd like to know.
He's not dispassionately detached from that.
Yeah,
no. Are we there yet?
Yeah, exactly.
He believed in rebirth?
Of course. There is all, there is, second chapter is a lot, there is a lot of discussion on rebirth, reincarnation. We'll come to that when we get to second chapter.
How is he going to do it?
So, dirgha kala, he says, implies multiple lifetimes. Because controlling the vrittis is not going to happen in one lifetime. It's just not possible. Unless you are already at a very, very high state of consciousness, or you're almost enlightened.
You're an adept, right?
Hmm?
You're an adept. You're already well advanced.
Right. You're already, and there are people, there are instances in our history where people say, you know, like they always talk about Ramana Maharishi and you know, many others. So even these swamis like Sachidananda, many people say that he was self-realized. His boss, his guru, Swami Shivananda, was self-realized. You know, there are all these people there, they claim. Okay, so Nairantarya means, literally means no gap, literally means 24 hours of the day. It is something that you have to live. You know, it's a lifestyle, basically. That effort to attain that state, it's not just lifelong, but it is all the time. Almost like saying that 24 hours of the day. But practically, what does it mean? You know, if you are practicing yoga, for example, at least do it every day. At the very minimum. You can set aside some time and do it every single day. That's the very minimum, if not 20, if, you know. You can still attain that 24 hours of the day stuff, but all the time. No gaps, though. Because if you start having gaps, then you fall back, it says. Then you lose the ground that you have gained so far. Or at least you have the ability to lose that ground. Okay.
Sometimes if you go back, you can catch up really quick.
Sometimes you can do that, but sometimes you fall back so much that you have trouble getting up again. Depends how bad the fall is. And then what is satkara sevitaha? You're fully committed to it, basically. You're convinced that this is the only practice that will help you attain that calmness of mind that we are seeking. And you start doing that with a sense of respect, faith, you know, out of a total sense of devotion, in a sense. Okay, so that's the definition of abhyasa, or the effort that is required in that abhyasa. This is all referring to that word yatnaha.
Is that devotion like a secular devotion or an Ishvara devotion?
It could be either one, but this is a devotion to the practice itself.
Oh, okay.
This is whatever effort you're putting in, yatnaha, you're devoted to that effort. You understand what it is and you're fully committed to that and you understand all the benefits of it. Therefore, you're doing it out of total respect for that effort itself. This whole sentence is referring to that previous sentence where it talks about yatna.
Yeah.
Yatna is the effort to bring about that abhyasa. Oh, the word I've written is reverential attention and devotion. Okay. Interruption in practice allows accumulation of negative vrittis, negating earlier gains. Reverence entails ascetic practices, tapas, control over sexual passion, knowledge, and unflinching faith.
Long time could mean multiple lives. I should have said not could mean, but it would definitely imply that. Okay, so that was abhyasa, the concept of practice. Now this one is talking about vairagyam. Vairagya is, talked about that, dispassion, non-attachment, detachment, whatever. All right. So you want to go through the Sanskrit first? Drashta. Anushravika. Vishaya. Vitrishnasya. Vashikara Sangya. Vairagyam. All right, one more time. Drashta. Anushravika. Vishaya. Vitrishnasya. Vashikara Sangya. Vairagyam. Okay. So what is vairagyam? Drashta means, actually drishta. Drishta means seen, something that is seen. Okay, something that is seen, drishta. What is anushravika? Shravanam. Hear. Let me explain these two words first, because this requires some understanding what these two words mean. When we say drishta, it's like that other word we had, okay, where seeing literally implies all the five senses. Okay, so here drishta means anything that is perceived through all the five senses. Okay. You know, eyes, because they always mention the eyes or the seeing as a kind of a collection of all the five senses. Let me come back to that. Then the anushravika. Shravana means to hear something. Anushravana means to perceive through studying something. So the implication here is, the commentators, this is all the commentators, because they try to interpret what Patanjali might have meant. So they say anushravika means something that they perceive based on their understanding from the Vedas or from the scriptures, or, you know, they've heard from somebody. Okay, that in that sense. You haven't heard it yourself, but anushravika means you heard it from somebody else. Somebody said that. And the things that they refer to here is like, oh, you know what? If you do this practice, you can go to heaven. Or if you do this practice, you can attain so much or such and such thing. And these are some of the things which are mentioned in the Vedas. The first part of the Vedas, it talks about different types of attainments by practicing certain yajnas, some certain rituals that you can perform and practice, and then you can attain something. Okay? So what he's saying is, you want total detachment from something that you can be attached to through the five senses, or something that you can be attached to through those, you know, stories like you can get to heaven and stuff like that. All right? Vishaya, Vishaya means, again, that's, remember we talked about the Vishaya, sense objects, or the objects of desire, that's Vishaya, objects of desire.
with Trishna. Trishna means?
Thirst.
Trishna means thirst. And with Trishna means? No thirst. No desire. Okay, so there's somebody who has no desire for either something that he can be attached to the five senses, or something that he can hear through the Vedas or somebody, or do this, you'll get to heaven. Things like that. I'm just giving that example. So think of somebody who has attained that level of detachment with no attachment to the sense objects through the five senses or to something that is otherwise heard. That person's vashikara sangya. Vashikara means, you know, that mastery. Vashikara is you have total control. In our language, we say vash mein kar diya in Hindi.
Possession.
No, just in under your control. It's in your possession. Yeah, you can say in your possession. You're right. Okay. So that level of mastery by the person who has been able to detach himself from the five senses and from the other things that he can hear from others, that is called vairagya. That's the definition of vairagya. Detachment. All right?
How do you get to detachment?
How
do you get to detachment?
To meditation. Meditation, yeah.
Yoga.
Absolutely.
Yoga and meditation, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Practicing all that.
So let's see what the commentators say. Perceptible objects of attraction may include persons of opposite sex, food, drink, music, etc. Imperceptible attractions may include paradise or heaven, achievement of siddhis, etc. Ah, that's what it is. So, drishta means perceptible, and anushravika means imperceptible, which are not through the five senses, but otherwise you can think of those. So that's what it is. Achievement of siddhis. Does everyone know what siddhis mean?
Powers.
Paranormal powers, so to say. Okay. There are some people who just focus on attaining siddhis, attaining powers, which is not what we want. Right? Kathy's smiling. Why?
She doesn't mind.
She doesn't mind having a power.
No. I was just thinking about like the people that do that mind control stuff and move things around. Like that's what an example of that, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I read about an iceman who can sit on ice for hours together.
Oh, really?
Can meditate
and, yeah.
He goes around,
with
his own shows and things like that.
Yeah. Like my sister was moving that piece of stone, so.
She did it.
In India also, we used to see some yogis coming and standing in the street, on the top of nails, standing
for hours. Yeah.
Just on the nails.
Walking on the
fire, walking on fire, standing on nails, this. I still remember this guy, he actually had a bed of nails, literally a bed of nails,
yeah.
Really sharp nails. He lied flat on his back on there. And then the other guy, he had a big piece of stone, put it on his chest, and then hammered it into pieces. And I still remember that as a kid. And these people are doing that.
most of them have science behind it also. So they have to hit it at the right angle and all that.
Well, obviously, and they have. They are siddhis. That's what siddhis are all about. But the point is, what he's saying is that if you focus on siddhis, you can never attain self-realization. That's the whole point. You have to detach yourself even from the desire to have siddhis before you can get there.
That part is easy. Yeah. I can detach myself from that.
That's probably the easiest thing I can do.
Yeah, but
there's
always that some desire of clairvoyance or being able
to see
the future. And you may detach yourself, but there is that desire still there. Right? If only I could see what happens in the future, right? Something like
that. Once you're enlightened, you get all the cities anyway. That's just a side effect of enlightenment.
That's right. That's what he's. That's what he says in chapter 3. They think of it as side effect, but not to think of it or not think about it or get influenced by those at all. At least never desire them as an object of desire.
Isn't it essentially, not from a superpower level, but just even to detach from what the outcome of something may be, right? So we're not practicing to be able to be in headstand, right? We're just practicing to perhaps one day get there, but if you don't, that's okay too.
Perfect. Absolutely. Well, my understanding, and I always like to say that, there's absolutely nothing wrong in having a goal in mind. You have to distinguish between the goal set by the ego versus the one set by the intellect. As long as the goal is set by the intellect, and then you're not perturbed by not attaining that goal at all, you're dispassionate at that point.
I think sometimes setting the goal can be the opposite too. You could limit yourself where you could even attain higher than that.
Absolutely.
It could be both ways.
Right. But then goals can be modified. Okay. All right, I'm going to stop here.